Hey guys, welcome to the Faith and Field podcast. I'm the host, Grant Benson. If you haven't already, check out episode 0 to hear my story. The mission of the Faith and Field podcast is to give all athletes a platform to share their testimonies and experiences of what God has done in their life. My hope is that God will reach athletes who need to hear these stories in order to strengthen their faith and enable their athletic journeys. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast and give us a follow on Instagram at faith_N_faith. We're active on Instagram, so give us a DM, let us know what you think, or even a prayer request. I pray that this podcast will be a good representation of Christ. Thank you for listening, and God bless. Hey y'all, welcome to episode 9 of the Faith and Field podcast. Today I was honored to have on Mike Cunningham. Mike was a former D1 track and field head coach. He has an amazing story of how he followed what he thought was dumb luck, but after he was saved, came to a realization that it was Christ's hand guiding him after all. We'll hear the theme of his community always inviting him to come to church wherever he was at the time. It was a fun conversation to hear this track coach turn professional poker player to being the national sales manager for Gill Athletics. You can follow Mike on Instagram at MikeCunningham1976 or subscribe to his podcast, Gill Athletics Connection. Thanks for listening. Enjoy episode 9 of the Faith and Field podcast. God bless, guys. Have a good day. All right, guys, thank you for tuning into the Faith and Field podcast. This is episode 9. Today I have the honor and blessing to speak with Mike Cunningham. Mike is in charge of Gill Athletics sales. Also was a former collegiate coach, and then also has a great story about taking a pause from that and then entering in the realm of the World Series of Poker, which we'll kind of dive into a little bit. But anyway, Mike, thank you for coming on the podcast and joining us and sharing your story.
Well, Grant, first of all, thank you for having me. I mean, anytime that I get to talk about something that's so important to me, you know, that's a blessing to me. And hopefully throughout today's podcast and, you know, people that are listening, hopefully it's a, you know, it's a real uplifting and story for other people that can take heart that you don't have to be perfect.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've had, you know, different, you know, guests on in the previous podcast, and also just even talking to, you know, students that I, you know, I get to mentor and talk to. And I mean, everybody has their own story, and you know, there's people out there that need to hear it. And it's important, whether it's like, hey, like when I was 3 years old, I went to church and asked my parents to like help me, you know, accept Jesus, to, you know, have these trials in my life and, you know, to figure this stuff out. And so, I mean, everybody has their own story, which is so important for just our own faith journey. And for others too, they need to know that they're not alone out there. Whether it's so something so simple as, you know, just an easy ask, or just the trials that you've gone through. So it's awesome that you're going to be on here.
Well, I'm thankful that you decided to do this kind of podcast. You know, there's been a lot of podcasts out there. You know, when we've been locked down through coronavirus, it seems like everybody discovered that they could create their own podcast. You know, as a podcast host myself, you know, there's value in those, and I think what you're doing with this one, this niche of talking, you know, specifically to athletics and sports people, coaches, athletes, but talking about this niche of their faith, I think there's just so much value in that. So I'm thankful that, Grant, you started it, man. I mean, someone's got to get up and do it, and I'm glad you got up and got it done, man. I'm so thankful for that.
Well, appreciate that, you know, and it was hard because, I mean, not really necessarily hard, but I feel a lot of conviction because, as you know, I run a meme page for those of you out there. I run a meme page that, you know, for right now has over 7,100 followers, and, you know, which is great. And it's been fun to like create those memes for the throwers and everything like that. But like, I felt this huge conviction of like, you know, I love Jesus more than I love like making memes for, you know, throws or even coaching track and field. And I felt this conviction of like, well, then why aren't you using that platform that you have and the gift that you have in that to expand onto that? So then, you know, I was sitting down and felt that conviction and talked to one of my buddies, and we came up with the name with Faith and Field. And, you know, it was supposed to be just generally just about, you know, track and field and throwers in general, but then it just kind of blew up into something bigger, and I'm excited for where the Lord wants to take it. And you know, people who come on or want to come on, they obviously have a story, and I can't wait to hear it from them. So, but yeah, I really do appreciate that. I feel like in this world that we are in today, there needs to be a connection between people who enjoy athletics and also being able to say, hey, like my faith needs to be a part of that. And I'm not alone in doing that. And whether it's in coaching with Coach Mastretta when he came on, or through, you know, college athletics, running, or whatever that might be, you know, everybody just needs to know that, you know, their platform is not just off the field when they're in a church setting or in front of youth groups or on a mission trip. It's right. It's on the field. You're constantly like that way. So,
yep.
But anyway, Mike, so some of you don't know, like, some of you out there may not know Mike, but he's kind of in sales for Gill Athletics. And that's, you know, some of you might know Gill if you're kind of in that track and field realm or, you know, life, that you'll understand, you know, the Gill Athletics, and, you know, they sell all the sporting goods and everything. But Mike, let's talk about maybe before leading up to Gill, you know, maybe some of your background of, like, you know, growing up in sports, like, was track and field kind of the main thing, or maybe it was another sport, or maybe it wasn't necessarily sports at all, but growing up, like, how did you get involved with athletics?
Yeah, well, I grew up in the great state of Alabama, so football was number one. So growing up, it was all about getting to high school so you could join the high school football team, and that's what we did. And I'll say we a lot in high school. My dear good friend, who I call my brother, we're not physical brothers, but we grew up together. I mean,
right.
Very few nights in high school if I wasn't at his house and he wasn't at mine, etc. So my brother Brian and I decided that we were, of course, going to play football, and we did, and it was great. And then track came around, and this is you're gonna laugh. If you're in track and field, you'll understand how laughable my thought process was here. But my freshman year, January, they made an announcement over the PA system that if anybody's interested in indoor track, you know, meet Coach Anderson in the cafeteria at 12 o'clock or whatever, right? And first of all, I didn't even know that there was an indoor. I only knew of outdoor track from the Olympics and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what indoor track even really meant.
Right.
But I liked it because I was like, oh, well, it'll be indoors, you know, so it's not going to be cold. Right. But I also thought, and this is the laughable part, Grant, I literally was like, oh, indoor track. How hard can it be? What an easy way to get another letter, you know, for my letterman's jacket. I was like, right. This is going to be easy. Well, you know, spoiler alert, it was not freaking easy. It was terrible. I was terrible, 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 terrible. But I did end up, you know, ran track through my 4 years in high school, played football through my 4 years, and just really loved, fell in love with the aspect of track, that it's a team sport and there's team trophies. You are beholden to yourself on whether you're successful or not. Outside of some relays, of course, but you know, surprisingly, I was an offensive lineman in high school, and I started my last 2 years and loved it. I'm so glad I was a lineman, because I think that's one of the more special positions in football. But you know, there were times where I would do the right thing, I'd make the right call, the block, etc., and we'd still get sacked or intercepted, or we'd still lose or whatever. And you know, it kind of stunk. You know, it's like, man, my play is important, but we need all 11 players, you know, to be perfect, right? Where in track, it was like, man, if I bomb this race, well, it's all on me. And right. Vice versa, if I do really well, it's all on me in that sense. Mm-hmm. In a very egotistical way, right? Because you got coaching, and, you know, teammates do play a factor in your success and failure. But yeah, track became my calling. It was the sport.
That's awesome. Yeah. I played football too. And obviously, and I shared in some other podcasts that was kind of like, you know, I was kind of bred in that way. I mean, back when I was in school, you know, University of Washington football, the Huskies was like, you know, Don James era, you know, back in like the early 90s, you know, they were, you know, co-national champions, and So my, you know, my third grade teacher, she was really up for me to play football. She was like, oh, you're going to be a football player. So that was kind of my identity. Like I was, you know, thought that I was all I was supposed to do. And, you know, and the track kind of came later in life. Like I was, a sophomore in high school and, you know, got to do, you know, track. And because I was so burned out of baseball, but I loved it. You know, I echo what you say about it. I mean, it's one of those sports and I try to get as many kids as I possibly can to come out for track because there's something about track and field that number one builds confidence like in them because they realize that they can accomplish something that they may not have thought that they could have accomplished, whether that's like run a certain time, jump a certain height or like throw a certain distance. Like, and it's only like it's the measurables. Like they're the only ones that can put the effort in to get better.
Right.
And if they don't do the stuff to get better, then they see other people who are getting better because they are doing the stuff. So they have to either buy in or they're just going to stay at the same level that they're at. And so what I love about, you know, the sport of track and field too, is that, you know, well, I should back up. If you are a lineman in football, you know, unless you're like, you know, a crazy freak athlete, you're probably going to be a lineman. You're not going to be a quarterback, right? You're not going to be a receiver. You're not going to be a cornerback, like guarding the fast receivers. Like you're probably going to play offensive line. Just like if you were a receiver that's like, you know, 6'2", a buck 50, you're probably not playing offensive line, right? Unless you're like, again, like a freak athlete. But in the realm of track and field, like, you know, a guy like a lineman could run and have his time and beat whatever that goal would be. And like, that's what I love about track is that there is a spot for anybody that wants to participate, like whether or not you're fast or you can run long distance or you can jump higher than other people, or like you're bigger and you like to throw, like there is a spot for you to be able to be a part of the team and kind of contribute on that, on in that, as well as like gain confidence in yourself, learn how to compete because it's you in that race. Like you can't rely on anybody else. And so that's what I love about the sport of track and field. You know, it teaches so many different lessons as far as like, you know, for other sports as well as in our own life. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. And, you know, you can hide in football, right? Mm-hmm. In other sports, right? You can either not start, never play, but be like, oh, I was on the team and we won the state championship or whatnot. Right. Or you could be a terrible offensive lineman, but the team could still be good because the other 10, you know, make up for it. And in track, what's so awesome is regardless of the event, it's more about competing against yourself. So whether you are a 15-second 100-meter person, if you run 14.9, you've achieved success in that regard, you know? It's just about a different definition of what success is.
Right. Yeah, I was blessed and had the privilege of kind of being mentored a little bit by the late, great Frosty Westring, who was a D3 football coach out at Pacific Lutheran University. And he changed my perspective on success and changed my perspective on like competition because he would say that he would always tell his athletes, you know, on the football field, you know, compete against your best self. And if you do your job, whether that's like, for instance, like if you're a quarterback in like one game, you're like 10 for 17. Well, if you go 11 for 17, like you were just better than that game before. Or if you're a lineman and you miss like four blocks, in the next game you just miss three blocks, well, you're better than the next game. And he just said, compete against your best self. And if you do your job to compete against your best self, then collectively winning becomes a byproduct because we're all doing to compete against our own best selves.
Right.
And like doing our jobs to do that. And so exactly what you're saying, Mike, is like if you're a thrower, you're competing against your best self because there's so many different body types out there for throwing, for running, for jumping. And I had a little bit of a stint of coaching cross country, and I told my cross country kids, I said, if your goal for success is to win first place, then you will not have a successful season. Especially in a cross country race when there's 500 other people that are running a race. If your goal and your measurement for success is winning a race, you will not have a good season unless you're like the best in that state or the conference, right?
And maybe one day that can be your goal.
Sure.
But maybe the first goal is break your PR, become the fifth runner on your team, the third runner, the first runner on your team. Okay, now maybe the goal is top 10% at the meet, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, yeah, it can eventually be the goal. You just got to have goal steps as you move through it. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. So you're in track and field. You have your brother – you know, playing football, and you know, you decide that you are, you know, going to try indoor track, which was not as easy as you thought, but you stuck with it. You know, growing up, you know, faith-based family, like in a Christian home, like what does that look like for you? You know, growing up.
Yeah, not at all would be the answer to that. I can remember. So I had a pretty abnormal childhood where I bounced between my birth mother and my grandparents every year. In fact, my wife and I were one day we were counting up how many different schools I went to from kindergarten through high school, and I went all to the same high school. So from kindergarten through eighth grade, we stopped counting at about 20. I went to about 20 different schools every year. I was at a new, like, there was no repeat, you know, 2 years in a row, and most years there were two to three schools, upwards of three schools, that I would attend, being bounced back and forth and people moving. It was just not stable growing up. And so there was no consistency in regards to any kind of Christian faith, any kind of attending church, etc. Things would kind of go in and out. I distinctly remember somewhere in elementary school, I was living with my mom, and we were out for a walk, and she had been going to church a lot. In fact, she had gotten saved. And I remember her asking me about God and did I fear him? And I didn't know much about God. I mean, not like I went to church or anything. So I was like, no, I don't. And I remember she looked at me. I mean, her head whipped around and she poked her finger out at me and she goes, "You should be fearful of God. He could kill you." And I remember immediately being scared of God at that point then. I was like, oh, my God. I didn't think of him that way. Holy crap, you know?
Yeah.
And so that kind of stuck with me. I didn't rebel necessarily against faith, but I certainly didn't go seeking it out.
Yeah.
So all through high school, no church at all, no thought of God, no praying, no nothing. You know, kind of just aimless. Out there.
Yeah, that's you know, it's tough to, like, you know, think about that stuff, but you know, ultimately, you know, it kind of, that kind of stuff builds our character and shapes us for who we are. And you know, it's funny that you, I guess that, I shouldn't say it's funny, but you know, that your mom would say, you know, do you fear God? And it's, and honestly, it's like one of those things that even like today, like in the church today, and I don't, you know, it's no fault of the church, because the message is that God loves you, you know, and God accepts you, and God, you know, wants you to, you know, he died, you know, God sent his son to die on the cross for you. And so in this realm, even in a Christian school, like, we, you know, we pound that idea in the kids because we want them to understand that, but there's an understanding of like God is, yes, God is our friend, and like he is our savior, but he's also like the scariest thing that could, you know, in the world, you know, because like your mom had said, like, you know, God could kill you. Like, I mean, that's ultimately true, that he could, right? But we live in a day and age today for, like, you know, the kids out there and people that walk in their own faith. And I know these people too, who like don't fear God in that healthy way of like knowing that, like, there is going to be a day that we will stand before him and he's going to ask us, well, what'd you do with my name? Like, there's no turning back to like go back and do what he wants us to do.
No do-overs.
Right. So there has to be that healthy fear of the Lord that we have of him, not because like he's scary and like we should fear him because like he's like so evil that he could, like, you know, destroy us, you know, I mean, which he could, but it's one of those things where like, I love you so much that I have that ultimate respect for you, that you are, you know, you are who you say you are, and not just like this, you know, I don't know. I feel like he's gotten this painted this picture of like this like little like, I don't know, baby, you know, the baby Jesus, you know. And yeah, I laugh about that. I don't know if you've seen that shit wet movie with like Will Ferrell.
Talladega Nights.
Yeah, Talladega Nights, and he's like, you know, the baby Jesus and the golden diapers, and like I feel like that's like the thought of like who people think like who God is. It's like he's just up there in these like golden diapers and playing a harp or something like that.
Right. Yeah. I think of it a little different way, to be real honest with you. And you know, we'll talk about this. Continue my whole story, but as far as, you know, whether fearing God or little baby Jesus, you know, to me, and life changes a lot when you have kids. So I look at my kids, and but then I can think of it how I'm at work with my boss and stuff like that, even my wife. You know, I believe God wants you to follow in the way that he wants you to act and treat others because you love him so much because of what he's done for you, not because, oh, he could take me down right now. Right. If you think about your own relationships with, you know, a partner, your parents, your kids, you love your children love you because you do everything for them, right? You provide the house and the love and things like that. They don't do their chores and love you because, oh man, my dad, he could kill me if he wanted. My kids are small enough. If I wanted to, if I was a terrible person, I could take them out. Right. But they don't think of it that way. They think of it like, oh man, that guy's awesome. My dad's great. I'm going to do the things he tells me. It's the same with your work, right? You think about your bosses. Some people do. Now I back up. I do realize some people are in a situation with their occupation and their bosses where they think, oh, I do what my boss tells me because he would fire me if I didn't.
Right.
And I know, luckily for me and several people out there, that I work hard for my boss because, oh man, he's an awesome guy. You know, he provided me a job, which helps me provide for my family. So I'm thinking about it a little different way. I do agree with what you're saying, though. I see the thought of people. I hear when you say, you know, people need to have that healthy fear of God.
Yeah.
And I look at the guy who, you know, openly defies God. It's like, oh yeah, yeah. You need to humble yourself here, buddy. Cause this homeboy can take you out. So I'm with you. I'm with you.
Yeah. Again, for the listeners out there, I'm not saying that like we need to fear God as like he's going to destroy us in that way. It's one of those things where like, you know, we have to have a healthy fear of the Lord and understanding that he is almighty and everything like that. He, you know, it's just,
that's right.
Like, yeah. And so anyways, so moving forward. So you graduate from high school. Did you graduate, Mike?
I did.
Okay. So you graduated from high school. I didn't want to assume. I didn't know.
I know. I went to high school in Alabama. I get it. You've got to ask, did you actually graduate? I get it.
So you graduated from high school. And then what was next? Do you attend college? Are you going to work right away? Like, how does that look for you? Are you an athlete into college, or how does that work?
Yeah, I was never blessed. You know, you can't beat genetics, right? So there was hardly no avenue that I was going to go on to compete in college, unfortunately. If I did, I would have chosen track over football for sure. But I was actually blessed to receive an Air Force Junior ROTC scholarship. So I actually took that scholarship up to Chicago. I went from less than 10,000 people in my town to the big city of Chicago and attended a school called Illinois Institute of Technology, which is a small, very highly regarded engineering school. Okay. They had a cross country team, but not a track team. And I was not running cross country. So I just went to school and joined a fraternity and actually only did that for a year. Good question on did I graduate? I did not graduate from that school. Mm-hmm. I'm not an engineer. Let me tell you, that math got me pretty fast. And I was studying computers, so computer programming and language and such. But still, so I went for a year, but track kept calling me, right? Even though the school didn't have a track team or anything. So I dropped out after that freshman year and started coaching at the local high school. So I became a high school coach, you know, when I should have been a sophomore. So I'd have been 19, 20 years old. And just for a couple of years in Chicago, just worked up there and coached in the afternoons.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah, I kind of got into coaching young at myself, you know, too. I shared in my testimony that I had gotten saved. And after I got saved, the guy who led me to Christ asked me 3 weeks later if I wanted to do Young Life with him.
Yeah, Young
Life.
And
so I got involved with Young Life 3 weeks after I got saved. And I didn't actually know what it was. And so I said yes. And I went to a meeting. And then I was like, wait, I get to go to these schools and talk about my life and build relationships with these kids to hopefully earn the right to speak into their lives. And he's like, yeah, you can do this. Well, so how do I do that? And so then we talked about various ways. So, you know, you go at lunchtime, you clean tables, you talk to kids, like we have our clubs that we would do after school. But then he's like, you can also coach, like you can also like do, you know, you could ask, you know, coaches if they need assistant coaches and stuff like that. And so I was like, oh. So that's how I got into coaching, because I got saved my freshman year, got into coaching track and field, and because I, you know, threw in high school and I really loved it, and I wasn't able to throw in college because I was on academic probation, and so I volunteered as a throws coach at this middle school and loved it, just fell in love with it. And so I kind of forego my own personal, you know, pursuit of athletics and just continued through Young Life and coaching. And eventually, like 3 years after middle school, got into a high school, and then kind of, you know, networked, you know, after I graduated to the school that I'm at now. But, you know, I've been coaching for over 20 years of, wow, of my life right now, from various, you know, middle school to high school, and, you know, obviously high school. And I had a small little, you know, 4-year extent that I was doing a little bit of collegiate stuff at the college down the street for a little bit. But yeah, I mean, coaching, I mean, as you know, even such a young, you know, young age as a sophomore in college, like it's so rewarding. So you got the job, you know, coaching, you're working, you know, how long does that last for you?
Yeah. So the first year, I was an assistant coach, and then, and again, remember I'm 19, and ironically, or maybe not ironically, I was, coaching at a Chicago Catholic League school. It was De La Salle Institute. And so I would, you know, I was working at a hotel overnight so that I could coach in the afternoons. And after that first year, the head coach retired. And somehow at the age of 20, I convinced the school to let me be the head coach. I wasn't teaching there. I wasn't there all day. I showed up in the afternoons, and for some reason they trusted me, and it was awesome. I'm so thankful for that. So after that, so my second year there, my first year as the head coach, I had a really good hurdler who was being recruited through some mid-major schools, and a school back closer to my home, within an hour from where I grew up in high school, Troy University was recruiting him. Okay. And that is really the start of my faith journey, is, my kid ended up not going to school there at Troy, but they picked me up to be an undergraduate assistant coach there. So I got to go back to start working on my degree and coaching collegiate track and field. And that is really that university and the people at that university is what stoked where I am today in my journey.
Well, that's awesome. So you had a hurdler that was potentially getting recruited to Troy, but somehow you ended up getting recruited down there as well. So how did, walk us through how that kind of worked out.
Yeah, you know, a lot of my story, I used to say, and you'll hear it throughout my journey, I used to say dumb luck, like I was just at the right place at the right time, etc. Recently, here in the last, you know, 10-15 years since I've been here at Gill and the church that I'm with at now, it's not dumb luck. It was God having his hand on my back saying, okay, it's time for you to go over here. Okay, time for you to go over here, you know, and building up to become the person and you know, son to him that I am now. So I was talking to the head coach one night about the athlete, and he mentioned his sprints and hurdles coach was a kid that had finished up his eligibility for football. We have a pretty good football team there, and was finishing up his degree. And I didn't think of anything at the time. He literally, it was just kind of just a comment, you know? And so hung up the next day at through work and coaching, I started thinking about it. I was like, well, wait a minute. Even you know, the slowest football player graduates in 6 years. So if this kid used up his eligibility, that usually takes 5 years. And, you know, is now coaching. I was like, this kid's got to be graduating, which means coach is probably looking maybe to replace that. So I called him a day later and I was like, hey coach, that guy you mentioned, I was like, is he graduating this spring? He's like, well, yeah, he is. And I was like, are you going to replace that position? And he's like, well, yeah, I guess I am. And I go, well, I need a degree. I really want to coach college track. This is closer to home. Would I be like, could I apply for that? And it was like both of us like reaching through the dark. We were both like getting to the same path, and we're like there was no like aha moment. It was just like, well, yeah, I guess you could apply for it. And so I had to apply for the school and get accepted first, and then luckily he chose me. I was there, and so I got to come down and coach hurdles and work on my undergraduate degree.
Wow, that's awesome. So how does that work? You have to still pay for school, or is that kind of a scholarship kind of a thing for you? How does that work?
Yeah, so I think the statute of limitations are up. So
okay.
I think the school misinterpreted the rule. So we all know about graduate assistance. You know, you got your undergrad degree and you go to a school and you start working on your master's and they pay for some or portion, et cetera, right? Undergraduate assistance is a thing in the NCAA rulebook, at least back when I haven't looked at that rulebook in 15 years, so at least back then. And what it was designed for was exactly what that other kid, that football player, had done. It was designed for an athlete who had exhausted their NCAA eligibility. You could get picked up to coach, help out, etc., right? Well, I technically had not exhausted my NCAA eligibility. You know, this is my third year out of high school. So technically I was horrible. So I had no one would have used my eligibility, but I technically still had through NCAA 2 years of eligibility left, right, which means I did not fit in that rule. But luckily for me, they misinterpreted it. And so they paid for all my tuition room. It's much like a GA position, except for instead of taking grad classes, I took undergrad classes.
Yeah. It's kind of a, you know, God's favor on that as well. Just, you know, helping you out in that way. And
absolutely. You know, yeah. Cause there was no way I was affording school to go to Chicago. The reason I picked Chicago was because of that junior ROTC scholarship. And combined with that school in Chicago, they paid for everything. I had no money. We didn't have money saved for college and for me, et cetera. No jobs to pay for it. So there was no going to college unless something by the grace of God came about. And that phone call from Troy University to my kid, Willie White, that was my grace of God, because that enabled me to get a scholarship and eventually earn my undergrad.
That's awesome. So you head down to Troy, you're working as an undergrad assistant, as a hurdles coach, and then you finally graduate, you know. So what degree did you get?
So I knew I wanted to be a college track coach, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't believe, and I still don't believe, that you have to have a biomechanics or biology, you know, that kind of degree. I think it tremendously helps. You know, you definitely got a head start on how the body moves and works, if you know that stuff. But so I was more on the lines of like, I will learn how to coach from other great coaches. I just need a degree, because you need a degree to be a full-time coach. So I literally went through the list of all the majors at Troy to find the easiest one. And I got to the middle, and there was a degree called public relations. And I was like, sign me up. Are you kidding me? Public relations? So I have a, I like to say I have a BS and BS. I have a public relations degree.
That's great. I actually was on track at the school that I went to at college to potentially be a double major in social studies and special education. But as my spring semester of my junior year, I was sitting in my poli sci 101 class, and literally was taking a test the first Friday of that first, like that semester in the spring. And the first day of class, the professor was like, if you haven't read these chapters in these books already, like you're already behind. And I'm like, what? Oh, this is the first day of class. So I get this test and it's like, you know, what are the three branches of the government? Like, what are these things and blah, blah, blah. And I sat there and looked at it for probably a good like 15 minutes. And like something in my mind was like, I don't want to teach this for the next 30 years. Right. I have no like desire to teach any of this for the 30 years. So I literally like stood up. Everybody looked at me because they're like, how's this guy done already? Because it was like probably like a 15-page like test, right? I walk over, I put it on, you know, it has my name on it, I put it on his desk. Then I walked out and I went directly down to the athletic department. And I was like, I need to talk to someone about being a PE teacher because I do not want to teach this teacher. So I literally like my spring semester of my junior year, we were like already like had declared everything. I told him I needed to change my major and like, you know, that people don't do this, right? You might have to stay another year. And I was like, I don't care. Like, I don't want to teach these things. And so I was very blessed because I was kind of already had an in with the athletic department because I was kind of like one of the main supporters of, you know, basketball. Like I was leading the crowd, you know, and so they all kind of knew me. And so I ended up with a outdoor education degree with a minor in PE and coaching from the school down there. And later that afternoon, I got an email from that professor and he wanted to speak to me because he wanted to know why I left, you know. And so I went in there and I was like, well, I looked at your test, sat there, realized that I do not want to teach this for 30 years of my life. I just want to coach. I just want to like teach PE. And he looked at me and goes, you are not the first person to have said that to me before. But I mean, I was very grateful for that experience because if I would have sat there, I'm pretty sure that I would not have, you know, enjoyed any of that. But yeah, it's crazy how that, you know, that kind of stuff works. And, you know, for you finding the easiest major to do that, I mean, I wish I would have had an inkling of just doing that from the very beginning. But, you know, it's but I'm very grateful for like where, how things ended up. So you get, so you graduate from Troy. Do you go into a graduate program to no? So you're not coaching. So you're still coaching at Troy? Do they hire you on as a full-time assistant there? Or?
No. I, one of those, you know, dumb luck, God moved me. I actually got the head coaching job of a junior college in Kansas.
Okay. Yeah. And where's that at?
I was at Neosho County Community College, a little town called Chanute, Kansas, in the southeast side of lovely, lovely Kansas.
Yeah. So walk us through that, because I'm sure this, because when I run the meme page, I always get kids asking me, like, how do I, you know, become a collegiate coach? Like, what's the process of, you know, becoming that? And obviously, you know, the obvious easiest answer is, like, you got to be an assistant first and do all that stuff. But, I mean, going from being an undergrad assistant to, you know, graduated from Troy, and then now you become the head coach of a junior college. Like, how did that work for you? Did you just apply for that, or do you recommend it, or?
Yeah, no, this was, you know, around 2000, so quote-unquote before the internet, at least the internet as we know it. So there wasn't, there was no social, there was no, you know, those kind of things to have, to know people and stuff like that. My circle was just around people that I was either at a track meet with them or vice versa. So no, I just applied. I'm pretty sure I was probably their fourth or fifth option. And I, you know, a lot of times people say that jokingly. I really do, you know, after I got there, I was kind of like, wait a minute, I'm starting to see some paperwork. Maybe I wasn't your first choice. But that's okay because I had no other choice. So
yeah.
I wasn't begrudging that I was their third or fourth choice when they picked me. So I was all good. So, but yeah, I, you know, I applied, got the interview. Yeah. I had to drive all the way from Alabama to Kansas to do an interview there. And, it went well enough that they eventually got desperate enough and they had to hire me.
Yeah. So where is your faith journey through all this process of, I mean, obviously you call it dumb luck, you know, those, and now growing into the faith, you realize that's actually God's hand, you know, giving you those, opening those doors for you. So, you know, where are you right now from being the high school coach at age 20 to becoming an undergrad assistant, and you know, growing up in a family that Christian, you know, Christian morals and values weren't taught in the family, other than like, you better believe in God or else he can kill you. So where are you at right now, kind of like between, you know, your undergrad coaching to like getting becoming the head coach at that junior college? Like where's your faith at right now?
Well, recently, you know, when you get old, you have the experience of experience, right? I can look back at how things were working, but in that moment, I still was not anywhere, to be honest with you. You know, so, but to back up to Troy, again, this is part of the, you know, I'm able to look back now. You know, my time at Troy was really, really special, and it's really the start of the fire of my faith, because I had a group around me, and I wouldn't call them my group of friends. I had other friends, but there's just a core group of people, including the head coach that was there at the time, that never gave up on me and never pressured me. So every Sunday they would say, hey, do you want to go to church? And I would say no. Every Sunday. I was there for 3 years, right? I had a year of college in Chicago, so I had 3 years to go. My sophomore year, never went. Junior year, never went. They never pressured me, never made me feel like I wasn't a part of their friendship because I didn't go to church. They never made me feel guilty about it. Never, ever, ever. And then the last semester of my senior year, I said yes. Probably shocked them more than it shocked me. And I did go to church that spring semester of at Troy University, but still didn't, like when I went to Kansas, it was not like, oh, I've got to find my church. Like it was like, oh, okay, I don't go to church on Sunday. So I went back to not going to church.
Yeah. What was that? What, do you remember an experience that made you say yes or anything like that to just try it? Or was it kind of like one of those things where I might as well go just because they've been asking me to be a nice guy?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. Memory gets old, right?
Yeah.
I think I had broken up with a pretty serious girlfriend. And so it was a little bit of like, oh man, who am I? What am I? I have nothing else. You talked about your identity earlier. Right. That's a really important subject about, you know, who and how do you make your identity? And I think if I remember correctly, my identity was wrapped around my relationship with this great person, by the way. Mm-hmm. And they moved away and such. And so I think it was just like, all right, what else? I haven't done this. Let's try this. You know,
yeah.
Hopefully I don't walk in and he just kills me. Right. Like my mom said back in the day.
Yeah. Like for me, I remember, you know, my top three priorities in my life were sports, girls, and friendship. And, you know, I wasn't physically able to play football because I hurt my back previously, my senior year lifting weights. Then I got on academic probation, so I couldn't do track. And back then, it was you had to prove yourself for a full calendar, full academic year before you got back onto being eligible. Then, you know, I didn't treat girls with the most respect in high school, and basically, I got a dose of that with this girl that I totally fell for. And then, like back in the day, like there was no cell phone, so you had a calling card, so I had no friends that I could you know, reach out to and talk to. And so, and then the relationships that I was building, I never really had a bunch of guy friends. Like it was all a bunch of girls that I was, you know, hung out with in high school. And so, you know, and they just didn't want to, you know, talk to me or whatever. So I was lost. And so I remember going to a college event and, you know, saying yes to go to this, you know, college event. And, you know, the guy talked about relationships and basically said the exact same thing that I was going through. And that's kind of how I gave my life to Christ. But I mean, I remember just falling, feeling at that low, kind of like you know, with a girl, like, you know, okay, well, I guess I'll just try this to see what happens. That was just like, that was for me. That I was like, I had nothing left because of the three priorities in my life and nothing else for that. So
that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
So talk about, so you're in your junior college in Kansas now. Let's talk about kind of like maybe fast forward, or maybe it's part of that, but like, how do you come to know the Lord? Like what are the steps, or do we have to go through a little bit of something else before that, before we get to that?
No, you're right. So at Neosho, County Community College, nothing real to speak of. I didn't attend church. I went a couple of times. I started dating a girl who went to church, so I went a couple of times. I'm sure there's a lot of people's story who has that involved into it. And then I went to Ball State University in Indiana, spent 2 years there, and a very, very similar to Troy, I was on the women's staff, the men's head coach, Jim Sprecher, who is now at Lynchburg University. I need to get you in contact with him as well. Amazing man of faith. Love this guy to death. The last semester, what ended up being my last semester at Ball State, I started going to his church and had a fantastic time. I leave Ball State and go to Mississippi State. No real faith or church. I didn't go to, maybe I went to church once or twice down in Mississippi State. But then I made a pretty big decision. Things were happening in my back of my head, little did I know, but I decide that I'm going to leave Mississippi State after 2 years, and I'm going to move to Vegas and become a professional poker player. And when I was getting ready to leave in the weeks leading up to it, one of my friends in my poker circle, her dad was a big wig in the gambling world of North Mississippi. Great guy. And she said, you know, my dad has a concern that you're going to move to Vegas and lose your morals. You know, so even then, even though I wasn't a Christ follower per se, I was still a good guy. You know, I was an SEC coach. You know, you have to be somewhat of a good person, you know, do those kind of things. And that really, like, it hit me in the head, like, oh yeah, I'm going to Sin City. Like, does it affect me or do I affect it? And really quick after I moved to Vegas, I'm talking about within the first 60 days, maybe within the first 30, I had a dream about a tattoo to get. Now I had one tattoo. I have a small tattoo of my fraternity letters from Chicago, but I'm not a tattoo. Now I'm a tattoo guy, but I did not have any tattoos then. I had a dream to get, so you know, the crown of thorns, yeah, obviously, to get that as a necklace with the pendant being the cross. Mm. And so I went to a pretty popular spot in Vegas. And like I said, within 30 days, I walk out. I have this, you know, it's a fairly large, it's a necklace. You can't see it because you're listening on the podcast, but it's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You can see it, Grant.
Yeah.
It's the crown of thorns as a necklace. And then the pendant is a cross. And it just, I don't know, I did not connect that maybe God was telling me to get that, but for me it was a little bit like my shield of like, okay, I am a good person, I do not believe in bad things, I'm in a bad city, a place, a city that profits off of bad things, I should say. Right. And I'm doing a, you know, non-traditional profession, I'm gambling for a living, but still no church. They do have churches in Las Vegas. I just never saw the inside of it. Yeah. And then as I was getting through with my first year, my year of being a professional gambler, professional poker player, I wanted to get out of that profession and get back into track somehow. And the dumb luck, I got hired at Gill. And so this is where, like, things start gelling for me about faith and Christ and who this dumb luck has really been, you know, gentle pushing. Okay, it's time for you to go to Vegas. Like, God, I believe God sent me to Vegas, to be real, real frank with you, you know?
Yeah.
So I get to Gill, and my first Friday at Gill, one of my now former coworkers says, hey, what are you doing this weekend? And I had already decided I was going to go to a church on Sunday. I told myself, I was like, man, think about this, Mike. You just did a 10-year career coaching college, and for lack of a better term, you threw it all away to move to Vegas. Who does that? No one does this, okay? Yeah. Come on now. You threw it all away to move to Vegas to play poker for a living, and look at you. You still ended up at a really good place.
Yeah.
Like, come on, Mike. Don't you owe the big guy upstairs a little something-something? Like, yeah, you need to start going to church. So being from the South, I had picked, I went online and said, you know, where's a Baptist church here in Champaign County, right?
Yeah.
So I found one, and that's where I was going to go on Sunday. So my ex-teammate says, what are you doing this weekend? And I explained to him, I was like, well, I kind of feel like I need to go to church. Like, I I feel like I owe the big guy. And he goes, oh, he goes, that's awesome. He goes, you know, a couple of us, we go to a little church. Would you want to go with me and my wife? And I was like, oh, that's cool. Okay, I'll know someone. Like, you know, a lot of sometimes our fear of going into a church is we won't know anybody. Everybody's going to turn and look at you because they know you're the outsider, right? So I was like, oh, this feels good. This may not be the church, but okay, I'll know someone. Right. Now, little did I know when he said, he said a couple of people. There was like 15 people from Gill that went and go to church there. And he said, little church. Well, that church, the Vineyard Church of East Central Illinois, which I'm a member, that's the church, spoiler alert, I stayed. It does like 1,000 people for 3 sessions on a weekend. There's about 3,000 people that go to church. So it was not a small church at all. Actually, when I drove up, I was like, what in the world? I'd never seen a church that big. I was like, what in the world? Walked in and immediately felt at home.
Wow.
I mean, literally have not missed a single Sunday that I haven't been on the road, traveling, et cetera. Until recently, unfortunately, with coronavirus.
Right. Wow, that's amazing. If we can backtrack a little bit, maybe we can talk about, like, what was, besides, you know, maybe seeing on, you know, for me, I would, you know, go do the World Series of Poker because I see it on TV and that, like, just to slide them all, you know, slide it in. But were you gambling? Like, were you kind of doing some, you know, poker tournaments, like within like the realm of coaching? Like how, like, I mean, maybe you shouldn't, aren't allowed to say that or anything, but like how are you, like, was that kind of a part of your life? Like from a very, like very young age, or how, you know, were you always a part of that? When I think about like that kind of stuff, I think about the movie Rounders.
Oh,
you know, that one is
such a good movie. One.
And then, like, you know, he's, you know, going to school, law school, and he's still gambling, you know, through the side and all these circuits. So I'm thinking, like, here's Mike, like on a weekend, like going back room of a restaurant down to the basement with a bunch of like just random people like playing these tournaments underground. Yeah. So was it something that was just kind of a recent thing that you did, or has gambling kind of been with you for a while now?
No, definitely not. You know, outside of, you know, me and my brother in high school playing penny 5-card poker, and we probably didn't even know that a flush beats a straight and stuff like that. I started picking up poker actually in Kansas. There's some casinos up in the Kansas City area. I'd never been to a casino before. And me and a bunch of coaches, we went up there and they wanted to play blackjack. And so they were trying to teach me how to play blackjack. And what I didn't like about blackjack and subsequently all the other gambling games outside of poker is you're playing against the house, and the house sets the rules. Kind of seems like maybe they got an advantage, right? They do. When in poker, there is a set rule and all 8 players have to follow the same rule. However, I'm playing against you. I'm not playing against the house.
Right.
And so poker is the only game in the casino where you do not have to have the best hand to win. Right, I can make you fold. I can bluff you, and that's what adds the element of skill. That it's a skill game. So I learned how to play in Kansas. I was absolutely horrible. I mean, I would drop. Back then, hold'em wasn't the big game. I learned how to play 7-card stud. That's how I learned how to play poker. We played 1-5 7-card stud. It's hard to lose $100 in 1-5. So it really is. I mean, you can play for a long time at $100 in a 7-card stud. I would lose it in an hour. I was really good at losing the money. Right. But I started studying and, you know, getting better and better. Moved to Ball State, didn't play much down there. But when I got to Mississippi, at Mississippi State, Tunica, up in the north is a big, lots of casinos up there. There's a great little casino in Philadelphia, Mississippi called Silver Star. They had a poker room. And then down on the coast on Biloxi and what have you, lots of casinos. That's where I really took the next step up. And in the city of Starkville, where the great University of Mississippi State is, there was a billiards hall. And that's my friend and her dad. Her dad owned that billiards hall. And billiards, pool players are the biggest gamblers I've ever met. And I've met a lot of gamblers. Pool players gamble like nuts, man. But they held a weekly poker game on Sunday nights. And so and with some good sharks there, they were good players. And that's where I cut my teeth. And eventually was like, you know what? I think I can Like, I think I can go to Vegas and do this. Like, I can live off of this. And my backup was always, well, I know enough people at this point, and as an SEC coach and all that kind of stuff, like, if I just went out to Vegas and was broke in the first 3 months, I could find a job somewhere. It yeah. might not be where I wanted, you know, quote unquote, Power Five or whatnot, but I'd be able to find a job. I knew enough people. I was a good enough coach. That backup plan was pretty solid. Yeah. But luckily, I was able to make it a full year with. I did nothing but play poker. There was no part-time job, et cetera. I lived one. I posted on my social media a while back a picture of my tax returns, and you have to list your occupation. And my occupation was professional poker player on my tax returns. I can say I was an honest to God professional poker player.
Yeah. So then, you know, walk us through the moment that you realized that I don't want to be in this scene anymore. Like, I want to, and how did you get into Gil?
Yeah, it wasn't any one moment for poker. It was, there was a string in the month of March. So in the month of December, I thought I had made the greatest decision in the world. I thought I was going to become a millionaire because of December. I made a lot of money. An obscene amount of money.
Yeah.
March is the reverse of that story. You ever heard what goes up must come down? Yeah, well, sure. A lot of times that's true in poker as well. So March, I couldn't win a hand to save my life. I mean, I was playing really well, but the statistics were coming against me. You know, I was just not winning. And I just kind of realized, you know what? A little bit like I loved your story about being in that social studies class, and you're like, oh, wait a minute. If I go through this, this is my 30 years from now, I'll be doing this.
Yeah.
And I love that you had that discovery right then and not 30 years later. Right.
Yeah.
During that time of March, I started thinking, wait a minute. I was 29 and I had turned 30 yet. I was like, wait a minute. Can I do this? Can I be 40 and 50 and 60 in doing this? I don't know that I can. It's a pretty stressful profession. Your lunch money is on the table at all times.
Yeah.
So I think similar to your one day revelation, it took me longer. I'm a stubborn guy. It took me a month to learn, like, hey man, I don't think, like, this is great. I'm glad I got the experience, but I'm not sure this is a career. This is just a pit stop in my life. Yeah. And so how I got to Gil, my former teammate, the guy who invited me to the church, I'd known him for a while. He used to be a college coach as well. And so at Gil, you know, we talk to, quote unquote, every coach in the country. So we know a lot of the jobs that are open or going to be open, et cetera. And so he was one of my people I called. They're like, hey, what college jobs do you know are open or going to be open, et cetera? And he said, well, so we talked about that. But then he goes, you know, he goes, we've got a job opening up here. And I was like, oh. And so we talked about it. And after going through the process, it was like, wait a minute. I get to go home at 5 o'clock on most nights.
Mm-hmm.
My salary was going to be the highest salary I'd ever made in coach. So I was getting paid more than I did a coach. When I went from Ball State to Mississippi State, I took a pay cut to go to the SEC. Mm. Not the brightest guy in the world. Okay. But I did it. So you're going to pay me more than I've ever made coaching. I still get to go to all the big track meets. It's not like I'm going into computers or car, like, oh, I'm still in track and field. And you're going to pay me to talk to all of my friends. You know, every friend I had outside of the gambling world was a track coach.
Yeah.
It kind of, now that one, it didn't take me a whole month. That one was pretty quick. Like, wait a minute, what am I thinking? Of course I'm going to go to Gil. So luckily through knowing him, the VP of sales, still my boss today, hired me, and it was easily the best thing for my life.
That's awesome. You know, Mike, what I think is so cool in your journey is the fact that God had placed people in your life to even just invite you to go to church. There's so many times that I, just even in my own life, that I get an inkling just to ask a friend, like during this, like a Christmas season or Easter season, and I lose courage to just even ask them, you know, to an invite to them.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like it's so amazing just how God uses people in simple tasks. Just, do you want to go to church this Sunday? And the fact that you had coaches that you coached with that would ask you every Sunday and not pressure you, not judge you for not going, but still had an open invite, I think is what a lot of us who are listening, even myself included, you know, just need to know, like, sometimes it's just a simple ask that can change someone's life. It doesn't need to be anything crazy or anything like that. Just, you know, or judging or, you know, whatever that might be. But just to say, hey, like, you want to go to church? No? All right, that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know? And then I just think that's so amazing. Like, because every, you know, part of your story of wherever you went, you know, like you had, you said that there are people asking you to go to church and inviting you to go to church. And like, that's so amazing. I don't even remember the last time I personally invited anybody to come to church with me, which is convicting, you know? And granted, like, I work at a Christian school, but still, like, I have friends that don't know the Lord, that know that I know the Lord. And I, you know, that in itself, like, your, that part of your story, that, you know, just, you know, convicts me in that way to, like, just ask. You know, not in a weird way of like out of the blue, but
yeah.
You know, but just to be able to have that inkling of just asking people to go to church. And I think that's amazing, that the persistence that God had to use people to get you to that point.
Well, and I appreciate you recognizing that, you know, people played such an important part of my journey, right? And after getting to the Vineyard, you know, starting going, and you know, that's where I got baptized. My wife, it's funny, everybody, I think stereotypically people think the girl brings the guy to church. Well, when I started dating my wife, my now wife, I was like, hey, I was like, not that you have to. And she grew up Catholic, and this is a non-denominational faith. I said, hey, not that you have to, but you know, if it seems like we're getting a little serious, and if we are, I would really like for you to at least try out the church that I go. And she goes, yeah, no problem. She goes, as long as you go to my church, the Catholic church, the next Sunday. And I was like, bet, no problem. How am I supposed to turn that down, right? She goes to the Vineyard with me. Same story, falls in love. Literally says, hey, we don't have to go to my church next week. And she used to work for the church. She still does, you know, volunteer work, et cetera. And so now, you know, 15 years later, people are like, oh, so how did you and Mike get to the Vineyard? Did you bring him into the church? And I'm like, nah, I get to, this is my victory here. I brought her to the church, you know? But here's something, you talked about the people, and you are spot on, right? If it wasn't for that core group of people at Troy, that's where my faith really started to grow, right? And so my way of honoring those people, some of them were athletes, you know, Melissa and Carrie and Jacob and Bob Lambert was my coach there. My way of honoring them is my firstborn son, my son's name is Troy. Like that was my, like, it was really important. I didn't know that my wife would allow me to name my kid after my college.
Yeah.
Cause I thought she would think it was for football. but I was like, no, this is my way of saying, like, every time I say his name and someone else says his name, I go, oh, like it hits me. Like what you just said, people, like, yeah, I think of those people and just their belief and trust and love in me when I was not believable and lovable and trustable. Right. And then, you know, Jim Sprecher inviting me to church. You know, that was the best part of my time at Ball State, was when, you know, that last semester. And then Carl Geisler inviting me here at Gill, right? Here's what's interesting, though. So I feel you when you say you're convicted. Let me tell you another story. So another guy who's very, very much like my brother, we grew up in the coaching ranks together. We coached at Troy together. I need to introduce you to him as well. Chris Baptista. He coaches at Cal Poly SLO. So Bap and I grew up, and Bap did not grow up necessarily in a Christian home. He was not I would not have called him, I don't believe he would have called himself a Christian when we were at Troy and at his different stops, right? But we remained very close at our, he went to his different institutions and, you know, humbly asked me to be godfather to his children and stuff like that, right? Well, one day he calls me. It was when I was at Gill, I was in my office. I can still remember, I went over and sat from my office. I sat down in that chair over there, and he tells me the story of how he had recently been saved. And it was amazing to me, right? When, you know, when you have a close friend, anybody, we should rejoice when anybody is baptized and saved and commits their life to the Lord, whether they're a stranger or mom or dad, right?
Right.
But this is a close friend who's telling me, hey, man, so this weekend I got saved and baptized, yada, yada. It was awesome, right? But then he tells me, he goes, hey, I need to thank you. And I'm like, what's he thanking me for? Like, I you know, he lives in California at this point. I think Oklahoma at that point. We see each other maybe once a year, right? I'm like, what is he thanking me for? And he goes, it was by your example that led me. He goes, I see how happy you are. I've seen how happy you and Amy, that's my wife's name, are together. I think we only had Troy at the time, your baby. He's like, you seem like your life is like at the top right now. And he goes, and you keep saying it's because you've given up. You've given everything over to Christ. He goes, I honestly started, like, I wanted that. And so I got into a men's group, which led into going to a church. And that's what led me to give my life to Christ. And I tell you what, you know, as a coach, you've had awesome athletes. Maybe you've had state champions. Maybe you've had national champions, all these kind of things. You've had a lot of success in your life. I have never had a success like my brother calling me and telling me that me just living my life helped lead him to Christ. That is the number one victory, brother. Let me tell you. Yeah. And so it doesn't have to be this grandiose event. It can be something as simple as, hey man, we go to church on Sunday. Would you ever be interested in going with us? And right. It could be just being an example, living your life focused towards him. That's the real grandiose event, by the way, because now you're affecting life in a positive way, our society. Right. It could just be living your life and people that you don't even know are watching you and learning from you and are motivated by how you live your life.
Yeah, that's good, Mike. That's a great constant reminder for, you know, just even for me, you know, and, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, think about that all the time. You know, I just, you know, I wake up in the morning and I thank God for another day. And, you know, I just sit, you know, tell myself like, okay, how can I honor him in the best way that I possibly can today? You know, and, you know, Lord, okay, you know, reveal those students or put those students in my path that need, you know, to hear your love and all that stuff. And I just have to remember, you know, just being an example through how I am, you know, speaks more volumes than like words that you can, I mean, you can say the words, but unless people see you do it, you know, it's just words, right?
And no matter what you do for a profession, it doesn't matter, right? But as a coach, as a teacher, you have more people watching you than you'll ever know. When you talk about Lord, reveal those people to me, and he will reveal some of those people to you, but the majority of people will never be revealed. They'll be the kid, not even on your team, the kid that stays in the corner, never talks to you. Maybe don't even know that kid's name, but he sees Mr. Benzel does X and Y and Z, and he says X and Y and Z. He sees that and says, man, that guy seemed like he was, you know, he was cool. He did this for school and the athletic department, da da da. I want to be like that. And you know, I used to see he used to wear FCA shirts or Young Lives. You know, you'll never know the impact you have on the world because it's huge.
Right.
You think your circle's small, and that's where you got to start. Wherever you are right now, that's where you have to start. Right. But your impact potentially, actually, I shouldn't say potentially, your impact is huge, point blank, period, right? It's your choice if that impact, that huge impact is positive or negative.
Yeah.
It is impactful by what you do is where you get to choose if it's a positive impact or a negative right. impact.
Exactly. That's awesome. That's a great reminder. Thanks, Mike. So you're at Gill. How long have you been there now?
Working on my 15th year.
Okay. And then, you know, maybe talk about, you know, kind of what you do is what your role is like there. And then, you know, I don't know, maybe just, you know, how you're, you know, just trying to impact in for what you're doing with other coaches or, you know.
Yeah. So my title is the National Sales Manager, the National Business Development Manager here at Gill for the Gill brand. So all of our track and field equipment, and then we have an outdoor construction line. So hammer cages, discus cages, but also baseball equipment, football goals, those kind of things. So I'm in charge of that brand and business development and National Sales Manager for that. That's my title. My role is pretty simplistic if you think about it. I deal typically with big facility and therefore college type facilities. My role is simply to help coaches coach. So my job is to help them stay focused on the number one aspect that they enjoy the most, right? If you, a coach has so many different responsibilities. If you were to ask the guys and gals that coach track, what's your number one, what do you love about track, coaching track? It would be, 100% they would say being with the kids on the track, throwing the hammer, long jumping, sprinting, whatever, right? It would not be paperwork. It would not be scheduling. It would not be my pole vault standard ain't working. And so I can't prep, you know, it would not be that. It would not. And if a coach ever said that was the number one thing, I don't want to talk to that coach, to be real honest. So my job, as I work with our R&D department, manufacturing, customer service, et cetera, is help coaches coach. Get equipment that meets your budget, that works, and you can go do what you love to do and work with the kids. That's simply my role. How faith plays in that role, you know, that's been kind of my most current journey is how do I more verbalize my faith, right? So since that one tattoo, I've got a couple others. I have in script on my back, the good news, John 3:16. I actually have my wedding ring tattooed on now. And this was the actual wedding ring that we first had. It's three crosses. That was important to my wife and I that, hey, you know, our foundation of our marriage is built on Christ's love. Our wedding ring should exemplify that. And so then I took it a step further and decided, well, I'll just get it tattooed on. I'll never be able to get rid of this thing. Right. Yeah. I have some, if people, hopefully the goal is if people are watching me when they see the tattoos and how I interact with people, et cetera, that they see Christ through me. The next step for me is, well, how do I verbalize it? How do I just make it, I don't want to say so that it's not special, but not like, oh, okay, I'm going to sit down and talk to Grant about Christ. I better prepare. And da-da-da. It's like, oh, no. Hey, Grant, how you doing, man? Yeah. Hey, man, I don't know where you are in your walk. Like we just talked. In fact, you and I are a great example. You and I were on the phone talking about track in general. And just through our natural conversation, it came up about our faith. Right. That is, to me, that's the cream of the crop, right? When it just becomes a part of the conversation, not this gear up, got to talk about faith. So, through different things, I'm a huge social media guy. So different social media things, the music I listen to almost exclusively Christian hip hop and Christian rap. So, people will see who I follow, who I retweet, those kind of things. And how do I have those conversations when I'm talking to coaches on a daily basis? My whole every day, all day, that's all I do is talk to primarily college coaches. How does it work its way into, how does God speak through me in those conversations? Being the host of the Gill Athletics Connections podcast, when I'm interviewing another coach, how does that just become a part of the questioning? You know, the obvious questions are, how did you get into track? How did you get to this position, et cetera, et cetera? Well, it needs to be a natural extension to ask, how does faith play into your work that you do? And sometimes it doesn't, right? Sometimes someone is not a Christ follower, they may say, oh, it doesn't. I have faith in myself. Well, that allows there to be a conversation like, oh, really? First of all, you think you do it on your own? Almost no coach says that. They know that other coaches have spoken to them and mentored them and things like that. But that's where I'm at today is how do I speak with my actions, not just my actions.
Yeah, that's important, because we don't want to have it. And, we don't want people to come off like you have an underlining agenda. of like why, you know, you want to talk to them or make them feel uncomfortable or judge them because they don't do that. And now they feel uncomfortable because, you know, they don't live up to the same, maybe you're judging them, or if they think that you are judging them in that way, which is totally not the case. And so, yeah, we, you know, doing it with intact, like not, you know, bringing a Bible and, you know, banging it and, you know, you have your invoice and you're like, oh, like here's a Bible, like probably not the best tact for that. But yeah,
I don't know. That's a good idea. I like that. I might have to float that one, my man. Hey, one of the things you just said there, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I do think maybe the most important thing you said right there is the lack of judgment. Mm-hmm. So that has been something I've been thinking a lot about. I didn't really know a lot and pay attention a lot to politics until 2015, 2016. I'm proud to say 2016 was actually the first year I voted. Most people would say they're ashamed of that, you know, because they didn't vote all the way else. But I finally voted. Yeah, I finally voted. You know, for me, you know, whether it's through politics and the news, et cetera, you know, a lot of bad things are happening. What I'm really falling back on is that I'm not the judge here at all, right? And we got to start, my belief is we got to start loving the person and disagreeing, disliking, hating, you could say maybe that word as well, the action, right? So, you know, we're all fallible people. I make mistakes. I hope for my sake that people still love and trust me. But when I make a mistake, say, hey, you know what? You shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have spoke to that person that way. You shouldn't have acted that way, et cetera, et cetera. But at the core, I'm still a good person because I'm the son of Christ, right? I think if we work on that with other people, whether it's, and, you know, not to hash through the things that are going on in the world right now, but the things that are going on in the one world, in the world right now, some people, really good people, because at the end of the day, we're all sons and daughters of Christ. Some really good people are making really bad decisions.
Yeah.
And if we can separate that, I think that helps us to understand loving and loving your neighbor and helping that person see the mistakes and make corrections and not condemning the person. Because at the end of the day, boy, I hate to tell you, if you think you are not the judge. Yeah. I am not the judge. You brought it up. We are one day going to be in front of that judge, but we are not. Our job, he puts us here to love one another. You know, the greatest commandment is love your neighbor like you love me. Right. That is the greatest commandment. And that is where I am trying to be real focused on. I'm not some guys and gals that are Christians are real. I mean, they're Bible scholars, right? I mean, they know every verse. I mean, it's actually kind of impressive. It's like, man, you've memorized that whole stinking book. That's amazing, right?
Yeah.
I'm not that guy. Like, I think I know 3:16 and John 10:10, and that's probably about it, right? So I'm not that guy who's going to know all the verses and spout verses and things like that. I'm the guy who's going to say, hey, man, I love you. I don't like these actions, but I'm not here to judge you.
Yeah.
What can I do to help you?
Yeah.
That's where I'm trying to really focus on everything. How can you like this guy? They did X, Y, and Z. You know what? You're right. What they did was wrong. They are a good person. God made them. They're a good person. The actions are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. Like when we, especially, you know, like you touched on it, like the day and age that we're in right now with everything that's happening in the world, you know, we are not the ones to tell people how to think, tell people how to post. Like, you may not agree with it, you may disagree with the things, but that's their thoughts, that's their ideas. There's no way for us to be able to change that unless we are an example.
Bingo.
Through, you know, how we post and how we talk.
Bingo.
And that we do it through a loving heart. Now, if there's things that people post that you know the person really well and you have that relationship with them, you know, you come at them with a loving heart, just, mm-hmm. you know, with questions and not necessarily the judgment of, you know, you're wrong and all this stuff. And I feel like people are losing sight of, like, of that whole aspect of, yes, we don't have to agree with each other. And yes, we don't have to like what people's agendas or, you know, political things or whatever that might be. But yes, we are called to love on people regardless of, like, if we disagree with politics or
regardless, or, period.
Regardless.
We are called to love each other regardless. That's exactly right. Yep.
Exactly. Right. Well, Mike, anything else that you want to share?
No, man, I'm just so thankful. You know, this was part of that journey I told you that I'm at right now, right? How do I share my faith more openly and more publicly? And so I'm just so appreciative of this vehicle to do that. I really am.
Well, Mike, I thank you for being on. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do that. If you want to follow and kind of see more of Mike, you can follow him on Instagram. It's at Mike Cunningham 1976, or get onto the his podcast, Gill Athletics, his track and field connections, and kind of hear him speak with different coaches and people that are involved with the track and field area and everything like that, which is pretty cool to see the people that he has on there. So, but yeah, Mike, thank you for coming on. I appreciate your time, man. It was such a great way to even get to know you a little bit more and just hear your story and how God kind of worked through, like, you know, everything from when you're a youngster down in Alabama to where you're at right now. I just think it's awesome, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Grant. Appreciate you doing this. Keep doing this, man. Keep doing this. This is an important podcast. Please keep doing this.
Thank you. Appreciate that.